Planning Commission meeting to order. For roll call, we have all commissioners present except for Chair Barksdale, who's excused, and I believe Commissioner Davidoff may be joining us later. I'd like to get a motion, please, to approve the agenda.
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Agenda is approved. Any other business? Okay. Any reports from boards, commissions? Okay. Any reports from staff at this point?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. A couple of things here. I know a number of you have been experiencing problems getting into your Outlook app to retrieve your mail. And what my recommendation is, until we get it fixed, is go online. And you would go to outlook.office365.com, and you would sign in that way. So if you continue to have problems, give me a call, and I'll walk you through it until we get the Outlook issue fixed.
Quick question.
Yes.
Would it be, especially with these issues that pop up from time to time, would it be inconvenient to send all email to our personal email addresses as well?
We're trying to get away from that, and the city attorneys advise us to not do that. It would be more convenient, but let's get the issue addressed, the tech issue with it. And you have two different ways you can approach getting your email. And so far I've been able to get a number of commissioners on the web-based Outlook, and that worked fine, and they were able to download information. All right, October 10th meeting. At this point, we have no agenda items. And also, the East Bellevue Community Council has requested some additional time to talk to you under reports of boards, commissions, and they were tentatively looking at October the 10th. So just give you a heads up that I'm going to ask them to come on the 24th.
So hold on, no October 10th meeting.
We don't know just yet.
We don't know just yet. Okay.
Yeah. Parliamentary training. I sent a calendar appointment out for Thursday, October the 18th. It's from 5:30 to 9 o'clock. Now, parliamentary training, Robert's Rules of Order. I know that makes a number of people cringe. But I will tell you, I went through this training, and it is the most interesting and informative way to actually teach Robert's Rules of Order and how you can run a meeting and be more strategic about it and be more efficient and effective. I worked long lobbying the city clerk's office for this training for all boards and commissions, and since as citizen volunteers, you don't necessarily come to the table prepared for that. So please make room on your agenda or your calendar for that night and do join us. Also, on your iPads, you may have system updates. I mentioned this at the last meeting. Please check. You would go under settings, and then I believe you would go to software updates, and if you have updates to install, that's where they would be installed. We've got to keep it current. Otherwise, the tech department comes after me, IT, because that makes your computer vulnerable. And finally, the Planning Commission's retreat is scheduled for November 14th, and I sent calendar appointments out for that. We're trying to confirm a location for it. We're hoping to get into GIX to have it this year. Details to follow. And that concludes my report, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Terry. We'll start with oral and written communication. I have to remind the audience, whoever's coming to speak to the commission, you have 3 minutes per speaker. We'll start timing you at the beginning of your time. And once you see the orange, is it orange or yellow?
Red. Yellow will give
you one more minute till your end time. We have Jack McCullough.
Thank you very much, Acting Chair Morisseau, members of the Commission, Jack McCullough, 701 Fifth Avenue, Suite 6600, Seattle 98104. Here tonight on behalf of the WIG, and you'll hear from them in a second. So I sent you a letter. I don't know if you got a copy of it today, but I'm happy to distribute some other copies. If you don't, Terry, I might give them to you. Sometimes I've been accused of overreacting to things. So if that's the case here, I apologize in advance. But in looking at the revisions to the policies in front of you, there has been the notable addition to the word public in front of streets in many locations, right? So that got my attention because we've been having an active discussion with staff about the nature of the streets on the Red Lion Hilton property when it gets developed. And so far, the position we've been told on the city's part is that these need to be dedicated streets, which means there's a column of dirt beneath the street, and the city owns everything to the sky. So maybe this is too early, but I don't know how this is going to be interpreted later, and so we need to get this issue out because it's a critical issue for the project. This project, as we laid out, you'll see the exhibit, has a high water table, and it is going to require a lot of parking, you know, even with the station there, particularly in the early years. So what you're doing is you're going down is you're building a bathtub to protect the parking from the groundwater, right? Very expensive. And every level you go down gets sort of geometrically more expensive. So our plan from the beginning has been to provide public streets at the surface that look like streets, that work like streets, that quack like streets. There'll be streets. There will be no confusion about that. There will be easements that govern them, and the city will be fully protected. But beneath the entire project, we need to have parking. And if we can't do that, if we have to have multiple garages, then what we're doing is we're basically building more than a mile of additional shoring walls around all of these individual blocks. It means all the cars, instead of the cars coming in on 114th and being able to circulate in and find their proper location, and the loading and the trucks, they have to come up in the pedestrian areas and find their way down. Now, the cost of all of this additional construction and the loss of efficiency is, we think, maybe $250 million. And you lose the attributes of shared parking. You don't get the loading out of the way. You know, you've got trucks now, and you've got loading docks, and you've got curb cuts and driveways in the middle of your pedestrian streets all over the top of this great mixed-use community, this pedestrian community. So I encourage you to look at the letter. Maybe it's premature. If so, that's fine. I'm sorry. But I don't want to be accused later of having been silent when there's an issue that's this critical to the project and we didn't say anything, right? So we really need to build it this way. If we can't build it this way, I'm not sure we can build it at all. Happy to answer any questions if you have any.
Thanks, Jack.
Yeah.
Leisha Wig.
Thank you.
Alicia Wig, 4811 134th Place, Southeast Bellevue. Thank you so much for taking the time today. So what is being passed around right now is your attachment 2 that you received. And in yellow highlighted are requested changes that we would have to your attachment 2. So I wanted to walk through on those, the reason we're asking for those. And I wanted to preface all of this by saying that we attended, my father and I both attended every single CAC meeting. So we got very intimately familiar with what was being discussed in the CAC, and we wanted to make sure that that what we understood was being discussed was being reflected in these comp plan policies. So the first item is item E. So we were asking, really this is related to city councils. City council gave a list of guiding principles to the Planning Commission. And one of those principles, principle number 5 on that, was to consider larger floor plates for technology tenants to come to this area. And so we saw other guiding principles from the city council reflected in the comp plan policies, but we did not see that one specifically, and we would like that to be reflected somewhere here. Item F, allow 15% in additional height for good design. So the background on this is when we were going through the CAC process, downtown livability had not, that code had not yet been passed. So at that time in the downtown code, there is a provision for additional height for 15% for good design. After the CAC discussions, then the new downtown code got adopted, and in that downtown code, they changed the code so that they just went to clear maximum heights to say, okay, if you had 200 feet, now it's 230 feet because you got the extra 15%. So we wanted to make sure that that piece was reflected. It's also shown in the CAC appendix on redevelopment scenario 4. You can look at that, and you'll see drawings of 230 feet instead of 200 feet for the buildings. So that was an understanding. And then if you go to page 3, this has already been discussed by Jack, so item 8, 11, and 12 he discussed. Item 15 is regarding retail uses, and so this is specifically what the CAC recommended, is they did not want big box retail. And if you go to the minutes of the CAC, it says we don't want, you know, 100,000 square foot plus retailers like a Walmart or, you know, a Home Depot, and we completely agree. But they specifically said that they're interested in a grocery store here. So we want to make sure that that is clarified and that a grocery store would be allowed because it is a neighborhood serving use. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Wig. Mon Wing.
Mon Wig at 4811 134th Place Southeast Bellevue. So I'll just continue on with where Alicia left off and go through the go to page 4, and we are looking at only yellow highlighted items because those are the only changes that we are recommending. So this was just, we thought it was just a typo about distinct versus district. And along with white sidewalks, you know, idea is here that we'll have these sidewalks and planter strips and so forth. Again, item 28, it is only, again, public open space. We will have open spaces, but we would not know on day one what public space we want to dedicate, that we want open space. We might have it, we'll have in the master plan, this much open space is there, and we think it's going to go here, but a year later we say, well, we may have to change the location because one cannot think of everything. This project is a decade-long project. So as thinking evolves, we want to be able to evolve with it. Okay, and then the last page, which is the diagram, figure A, we are saying that street A needs to connect to either the enhanced intersection or to the main street or to 112th. It should not dead end in a place and then go pedestrian, and now we'll have to make the cars circulate and go around. We need the connection towards the north. Or if that is not possible under any circumstance, then we would like to do it towards the 112th. And that will be our last choice, but our first choice is go to the intersection, make it a five-way intersection. If that doesn't work, then let's go to Main Street or create a two-lane road where the slip road is now, or maybe even on our property, so that we can have circulation around our property. So those are the thoughts.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Wigg. Anyone else? Yes, Commissioner Carlson.
Would it be possible to ask a few questions about what we've, about this letter and the testimony that we've received?
Well, I'll tell you, staff hasn't had a chance to really digest the letter, and I
don't know if most of the Planning Commission, I don't think, has had a chance to really go through it.
Because we all walk this,
right, but
this development. And what I'm curious about.
Well, it's fine to have some clarifying questions, but we have to be careful you're not actually, you know, holding the equivalent of a public hearing outside.
Certainly. Clarifying questions only. Are you building these streets?
Yes.
Yes, we are.
Yes.
And are you maintaining these streets?
Yes.
Yes.
And they remain on the tax rolls.
Then why would the government be controlling these streets? It's your property.
Yes.
You're building them.
Yes.
You're maintaining them.
Yes.
You're servicing them.
Yes.
It's not enough, though.
Thank you for the clarification.
Anyone else in the public would like to speak to the commission? Okay. We're going to start with our first study session of the night on the Grand Connection Design Guidelines, and we're going to have Emil King join us from staff. I'd like to remind the commission the point of this study session tonight is to understand the final revisions proposed here and to ask any remaining questions or requests for information before we can make a decision at the public hearing for November 7th.
Okay, thank you, Chair Morriso and members of the commission. Tonight I'm here to continue the commission's discussion of what are called the Grand Connection policy amendments. Back in May of this year, staff joined the commission and presented a set of draft policies for your consideration. Those are shown as attachment A in your packet. At that point, we were presenting these as the initial draft and asking for comments from the commission. We received two in the minutes that I basically made amendments to the draft that's in your packet. We also added in some narrative changes, so the language that sets up the policies in the comprehensive plan, and we also added the map that would basically show the extent of the Grand Connection, and that's shown as attachment two. The importance of this work is to set up the commission for the public hearing on these amendments, and that's tentatively scheduled for November 7th of this year. So the significant changes or changes that we made to this draft included two elements. There was one commission comment that wanted to not be so specific regarding light rail transit and its relationship to the Grand Connection, but be more generic in nature. So we amended the language to say transit stations instead of just light rail transit, and that's shown in SDT 144.2. And then the other comment we received from Chair Barksdale, and that was regarding performance measures and any refinements that we want to make to the Grand Connection. So we added in a new policy to the downtown subarea plan that's shown on page 3 of attachment 1 that basically says that the city would periodically review the performance and use of the Grand Connection based on the stage of implementation and a set of established measures of success. So that's a new language from May. So there's not a lot of changes that we made to the earlier draft that you saw in May, but we are open to additional comments tonight on essentially attachment one. So we can get into that in a minute. And then as far as attachment two is concerned, there's our normal practice is to show the general change that would be made to a series of maps, and then at the public hearing we would actually have amended specific maps in the elements. So this is the general extent of the Grand Connection. We've been doing some refinements to what we call the segments. So you can see there's an old Bellevue downtown park segment, a pedestrian corridor, Bellevue Way segment, Civic Center, and then the 405 crossing in Wilburton. So a map like this will be, amendments will be made to a handful of maps in both the downtown subarea plan, Wilburton, Northeast 8th, subarea plan, and the urban design element. So those will be ready for your public hearing, but it'll be consistent with this extent of the grant connection. And just a reminder on the overall process that we're going through, I think I look back at the May presentation and it wasn't as crystal clear about where we were at on the grant connection and the Wilburton study. The grant connection, we had a council-approved framework plan, which you can kind of think of as the high-level vision for the grant connection in December 2017. And what we're doing now is spending this calendar year doing the comp plan policies that are going to help implement that high-level vision. And we are also working at the staff level and with stakeholders on developing code and design guidelines and hope to come to the commission in 2019 to have those go through the commission process, and those would ultimately be adopted. The complementary effort on the 405 crossing alternatives, there is published material on three different options on how to cross over I-405, and based on council direction, we'll be likely visiting them sometime in the fall or winter to seek direction on what their preferred crossing option is and talk more with them about that. And then from the Wilburton study standpoint, that was the CAC that came up with, again, the high-level vision for the Wilburton area, so on the east side of the interstate. They did their initial handoff with council in July. We hope to return back to council in the fall to get any additional direction. And then in 2019, we would be doing policy and code and design guidelines very similar to how we basically implement a lot of these other projects. So I just wanted to be crystal clear about where we are on these different projects, because we've had some confusion in the public about how these two projects are moving forward. So with that, I'm happy to entertain any questions or suggested edits to the material that you see.
Question?
Go ahead.
So I read in the paper that the Barnes & Noble site sold, and I remember wondering about that when Bradley brought it through, thinking, how are you going to kind of make that change, because it seemed like it was key to the grand connection, creating that plaza. So is there any thought that the timelines need to change to make sure that if they come in for permitting, this is in place? Or does it matter? Or is just curious.
Yeah, this policy work and code and design guidelines are moving forward as fast as they can. Even with staff departures, we're mm-hmm. reorganizing our hours in the day to basically continue to move all projects forward in a timely manner. So I think this timeline is what it is, and we are continuing to move those forward and actually reallocating resources to make sure they continue on that path. In addition to all the work that you see on the screen, myself and a team of others are working with a handful of projects that are actually on the Grand Connection route that would like to get permits in the near term. So we are using the high-level vision and our best thoughts on what we have in our design guideline work and these policies to help guide their efforts in a way that's going to further the Grand Connection, absent not having the adopted language yet. So it's an area where we think we don't want to miss any big opportunities. Mm-hmm. So we are working with like the Barnes & Noble and Doxa Church site, and there are a series of other sites who are wanting to. They basically asked the question, what would the city like to see in the Grand Connection implementation? Mm. So we're providing as much direction as we can.
Okay. Thank you.
Anyone else? Okay. I guess that concludes this study session. Thanks, Emil.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
We're going to have our final study session on the East Main Station. Exciting. And Deborah Munkberg and Trish Byers from staff will be joining us.
Hello. Good evening.
Wanted to just provide a short briefing on where we are in the code amendments for the East Main Station area. This is the, I think it's the fourth time we brought policies forward to you, and we just have a few recommended revisions to the policies prior to the November 7th, excuse me, public hearing. So just as a reminder, the amendments that we've been looking at are for the glossary, an amendment to the comprehensive land use map to show this is a TOD area, some amendments to the land use element, and then the majority of them are to the Southwest Bellevue sub-area plan. And again, just very briefly, in the glossary, we're looking at a new definition for transit-oriented development, which is not now a defined term in the plan, and then a more specific definition for the East Main Transit-Oriented District. In the land use element, we're proposing to insert some new policies that provide sort of general high-level guidance for character and uses and type of development in a transit-oriented development area. And then the majority of the policy changes are in the Southwest Bellevue sub-area plan, and those include the topics you see there, the overall vision for the area, land use policies, transportation, urban design, open space, and the natural environment. When we last met, it was on July 11th, and there were a few questions that came up when we were talking through the policies, and so we wanted to just touch on those to kind of give you our best response to those. One of the questions was whether the notion of a graceful transition came up during the CAC discussions, and you might remember that was a term that we used in the vision to talk about sort of the transition down in height and intensity toward the residential neighborhood. And just took a quick look back. The term itself, graceful transition, doesn't appear in the CAC plan or in the minutes, but it does. The idea shows up there in the City Council guiding principles to the CAC, talking about density tapering down toward the adjacent lower density communities, as well as integration of the station into the neighborhood. And similarly, the City Council charge to the CAC talks about developing strategies to enhance the community overall. And then just quickly looking through the minutes, there are numerous places at various times during their discussions where there's discussion of kind of the overall station character, how it fits into the neighborhood, and how it transitions toward the residential area in lots of different contexts. They talk about it within the context of kind of uses, height and form, noise levels, and overall character of the station area. So that concept of transitioning from the downtown to the residential area in a graceful way is discussed, although those words aren't used. The second question had to do with what the daytime population is of this area, and there wasn't ever a formal estimate or calculation of that as part of the planning process. So we took a look at the kind of a working model that we've been using that's developed to meet the FAR and height maximums, and just tried to do a kind of a rough estimate for you just to get a sense of magnitude. And roughly what we came up with was about 3,400 employees at full build out, and a similar number right around 3,200 residents at full build out. That may change, obviously, depending on development, but that's a kind of a order of magnitude estimate. And then the last question had to do with whether there were local business incentives to encourage businesses to locate in the transit-oriented district. And just speaking with our economic development folks, there are no specific incentives for the transit-oriented development district, but there is an overall business retention and expansion program in the city that is staffed and works with all businesses in Bellevue and would certainly be applicable in the East Main area. And then the other update we wanted to give had to do with an open house that was held on September 5th. And the purpose of this was really to give an update of sort of where we are on the code work and overall direction that we're anticipating. You can see the topics that we covered there. And what we really tried to do for many of those topics was to express what the CAC recommendation was in the East Main plan, and then what the corresponding land use code direction where we're working toward. that we had about 20 participants, I would say, and there were members of the CAC that came. There were members of Surrey Downs, as well as some of the property owners in the area. And I'd say just our general characterization would be there was general interest, there was appreciation for the direction that was going, and there's was certainly some sense of holding back on specific comments until the full code is released. Any questions on any of that so far?
When you had that public open house, what were the concerns, if any, that was that were raised by the public?
You know, Trish, you can help. My sense was that there weren't really specific concerns. There was a lot of interest in more bike access. There was some interest. We asked some questions about open space, and there was a lot of interest in kind of gathering places, and there were some kids there, and there was some real interest in some active open space in that area. What I heard a lot of was more the biking and walking connections.
Yeah. We the one individual that I really liked wanted a batting cage. I made that very clear. The comments that I had were more just trying to gather information as to what was going to happen and what the CAC had recommended. There was some comments about just how high is that 300 feet going to be and what does that look like. And we tried to explain that to them. And we had pictures of Bellevue Bellevue buildings that were 300 feet tall or 200 feet tall, and the fact that the Hilton is about, I think, was 89 feet tall, so that they could get some idea of how these other things would look next to the Hilton. But mostly it was a fact-gathering mission for most people, I think. There wasn't a lot of, you know, opposition or anything like that. It was mostly just people asking questions.
Anyone else in the commission?
All right. I just wanted to then just get to tonight's meeting and the revisions that are proposed to the draft policies. As you can see there is the first bullet there has to do with public streets, and there is a proposed change to the transportation goal and to updated policies 8 and 11, just referencing the street system as for the public. Similarly, on policy 12, we're referencing a public street network laid out in a small block street grid. And we've also included a generalized street diagram to kind of illustrate what that might look like, shown as figure 1. And then policy 14 talks about ensuring that there is the ability to meet the maximum densities permitted within the site area. And then policy 27, again, references open space as a public part of a public open space system. I think those are the primary substantive changes. The rest are more editorial for clarification and simplification of language. And then the last thing I wanted to mention is you got in your packet a fairly large table. We had presented this at the July 11th meeting. This is just taking the draft comp plan policies and showing how they compare to adopted comprehensive policies as well as to the East Main stationary recommendations. And we just updated that table to reflect the changes shown in the most current draft. And that's all.
Commissioner Lang.
Are all of the City Council's guiding principles reflected in the draft policies?
We've reviewed them. All of them, there is not a one-for-one correspondence to policies and the guiding principles, but they're all, the overall intent is reflected in the policies right now.
Okay. I don't know how the commission feels about this, but in just being able to, like, orient toward that, and I'm sensitive to this, thinking back to the three-hour tour that was the Downtown Livability CAC and the significance of the council's guiding principles in that, I'd like to see how those policies are. I'd like to have the policies kind of as part of the material so that that becomes a lens that we're looking at, especially at the public hearing. And I would like to make sure that those policies are reflected, the council's policies are reflected, or guiding principles are reflected as actually umbrella policies, because that's, you know, at least the planning processes I've been a part of for going on 7 years on this commission, the council's framework is really what drives this. And so I think it's super important that we as a commission be faithful to the council's guiding principles as we're looking at this. So.
Anyone else?
If you guys want to indulge me for a minute, so I've looked at it. I probably, like the rest of you, only looked at the Silver-Tongued Devil's letter. Pardon me, Mr. McCullough's letter. At kind of getting to the meeting today, but even without looking at that letter, when I saw the materials and I saw this generalized street diagram attached to this, like my heart kind of like, I felt a tightness in my chest. And I'll tell you why I felt a tightness in my chest. Because we dealt with some of the issues, not dissimilar issues, in looking at the downtown livability with these kind of through block connections and the impact that it has to property owners in the city, literally putting a map in the comprehensive plan or in the zoning code that says, like, we're going to run a public path through your property. And maybe that's not the exact location, except for the diagram doesn't say that's not the exact location. And I think that rather than having, you know, and I know it's called generalized, but I can tell you when you, some planner and some staff years from now as this development goes forward, they're going to look at that as, they're going to read the word generalized out of that. I would suggest that the direction would be that we totally eliminate this because the, one, for me anyway, just looking at it, it doesn't meet with one of the council principles, which was to look at kind of like more of a pedestrian and bike-oriented set of circulation through this. Two, this is like a street network. This isn't, and you look at what's being proposed here, these are automobile streets, and then you look at the rest of the comp plan and they're calling for like wide sidewalks and all this. So it's like, in my mind, how much of this site do we want to eat up with rights of way, like streets, like auto-oriented streets? Second thing is, I don't know that this configuration means anything. I would rather say, like, look, there needs to be north, south, and east, west pedestrian and vehicular connectivity. Maybe put some really general parameters around, like, you know, the connections shouldn't be closer than 120 feet to each other and shouldn't be farther than 300 feet from each other. And let the developer or developers figure out, like, where these things are going to be as they actually go through and master plan the site, rather than coming up with a generalized street diagram that's going to be treated as anything but generalized. And along the same sort of lines there is, like, when I think about good design, like good now, like transit-oriented development, good urban design, you're not talking about these classic north, south, east, west, perpendicular type street grids. You're talking about things that are more curvilinear, because where you have vehicles, that will help to slow them down. And so, like, first time I've ever been there, it was fantastic. I was up in Whistler this summer. Now I know what, like, the whole rage is about. If you think about, like, how the Whistler villages are, that would make a lot more sense in terms of how the internal connectivity would be inside a transit-oriented development site, where you have sufficient width that if you needed to bring emergency vehicles in or other things, but otherwise it's totally pedestrian-oriented at the top, and all of the parking comes, all the cars come in underneath, and then you park and you pop up and you walk around. And there are obviously vehicular connecting streets around it, just as there are vehicular existing connecting streets around it. And so I would really see, like, look, if we have a real vision here for TOD and the council, there's nothing, by the way, in the council's principles that I saw in here that actually says anything about vehicles. It's talking about pedestrians and bikes. That's the orientation in my mind that better reflects that and better reflects good transit-oriented development. I would love to just see this completely removed, and rather just there be some guiding principles about how intra-site connectivity is provided. And then just a couple other things. You know, we had these discussions when we looked at downtown livability, and we talked about some of the publicly accessible spaces on private property, and that could be plazas, that could be, walkways, all these types of things that provide connectivity. It might provide places for people to congregate, but they are still, it's still private property, and there is still some ability for the private property owner, who is responsible for maintaining it and repairing it and all the rest of that and paying taxes on it, there's still some opportunity for them to impose some reasonable limits about the things that would occur on that. And so I respect, you know, learned counsel's desire to remove the word public, which is actually completely consistent with the language in the council principles. The word public doesn't appear there. But I also see that from the letter, there was an attachment that was essentially like a public easement, which is basically what developers in downtown Bellevue do when they put a plaza in. You know, they create public access through an easement, but it is not a dedicated piece of property that gets over. And I'm not saying this is where we should go, but I personally think that if the concern is that this site might somehow not be publicly accessible, like in terms of the pedestrian connectivity, bike connectivity, and even vehicular connectivity, to me, then the solution is to say publicly accessible, not public. There is a significant and important difference there. And then, you know, I have to say, kind of finally, you know, the process that the public has gone through on the East Main Station has been a long process as well. I think it sort of overlapped with the tail end of downtown livability, but you know, it's kind of coming up. It is amazing to me, and I think it's a testament to probably the level of communication between the public, the city staff, and the property owner, that literally these are all of the changes that the most impacted property owner has to this proposal. I find that absolutely astonishing. And to put that in perspective, do you remember the last year and a half of downtown livability, much less the last night of downtown livability before we made our recommendation? So this speaks to me implicitly of a really, really good process. And so I just say, like, kudos to the city, kudos to the public, kudos to the developer. And that's it.
Commissioner Carlson?
I just want to reinforce Commissioner Lang's point about public versus publicly accessible. If there is a park or a plaza that is privately owned and privately maintained, there's also more leeway and latitude for the private landowner to set things like hours of operation, to enforce rules against loitering or vagrancy or panhandling. It's not clear going forward how much latitude government will have. I don't know if you caught the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals decision in Boise, where advocates for several homeless people who were sanctioned for sleeping on a park bench argued that they didn't have any place to go, so being forced to stop sleeping on the park bench was a violation of their constitutional rights. The Ninth Circuit ruled that they were correct, that it would be an imposition of cruel and unusual punishment, because it was a public space, public area, public bench. They didn't have a place to live, so that's where they wanted to convalesce. Private landowners would have more control over that. Now, this Ninth Circuit decision might be reversed by the Supremes going forward. It's difficult to tell, but I guess what I'm saying is the issue is very much in flux. The issue about government latitude for enforcing rules against loitering, vagrancy, and the like is a little more foggy than it was. But private landowners, not so much.
Commissioner Mulgalka?
A couple questions, because I don't have the background of being on the commission back with when downtown livability happened. One, what was the purpose of the map for staff? Why was it included? If that's as an example, or why did you choose to put that in the first place?
It's intended just as an illustration of what we meant by a small block street grid.
Okay. And so it wasn't, you could potentially redo it in a more generic fashion just to say, but we're looking for small block sizes is kind of what was my understanding the map was there to show, not necessarily to show a card.
Yes,
of, right.
Accurate.
The size of block, not the connections necessarily. Second point to your characterization of the Ninth Circuit ruling, it was about criminality of actions, mm-hmm. and I think there's a good question of whether it applies in Seattle or Bellevue. So I, too, have been following that case since it applies to my everyday work, and I don't know if it's how you characterized it is exactly fair. So
we're in the Ninth Circuit.
We are, but I don't think that Seattle or Bellevue thinks it applies to the way they put laws forth. Anyway, I'm not disagreeing with the other points. I just wanted to clarify that.
Thank you, Commissioner Mulcahy. Anyone else? Is that all for us tonight, staff?
Yeah, I might just say that the use of the word public is intended to be, just as it sounds, for the public. It wasn't intended to suggest that it would be dedicated or that it would be an easement. It was just intended to say these should be for public use.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Deborah and Trish. Appreciate it.
Can I say something?
Oh, yeah, Commissioner Malakuchi.
Is it the last time we are seeing you, Deborah?
Mm-hmm. Yep, very likely, yes.
So I just want to say thank you so much for everything you have done for us so far.
Well, thank you very much.
Really appreciate it. You.
Thank you.
Of course.
We had a
one.
No escaping mid-process clause and everything.
Well, it is an escape room. She's got to solve a puzzle to get
in. with the length of our process, that's almost impossible.
You figured out where I was going with this.
Thanks again, ladies.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
So we'd look... going to move forward to the approval of minutes. First is the minutes of June 27th.
That was the public hearing you had on threshold review with Newport Hills. 25
Sadly,
pages.
Sadly, the attachment was that in here.
I read every word. So I can
review. Riveting is the word that you're trying to.
Just don't know why how that escaped me.
So I'd like to entertain a motion to approve the minutes of June 27 as noted.
And I just I noticed that there were, I don't know, I mean everybody could see it. There were kind of like some edits and things in the packet. I presume that what. Mm-hmm. I just want to make sure that what we're talking about is the edited, as edited. And proposed here. So.
Could I get a motion?
So moved.
Second.
Second by Commissioner Mulcahy. Any discussion? Changes to the minutes? All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you. Minutes of July 11th. Could I please get a motion to approve the minutes of July 11th as edited?
So moved.
Second.
Any discussion or questions or changes? All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed?
I'm just going to abstain because I wasn't there. I know we don't have to do that, but.
Okay. Commissioner Lang is going to abstain. Thank you. We're going to have another version of oral communication. If anyone would like to come back to the commission, of course, Mr. McCullough.
One more. I'll keep it short. Thank you very much.
You still have 3 minutes.
Thank you very much.
You know the routine.
It was fitting that I infused my earlier comments by saying that sometimes I overreact, right? So I just want to acknowledge that based on what we heard from Ms. Mungberg, that the inclusion of the word public was not intended to mean that any of these had to be dedicated, was helpful and comforting to us because we share the vision that Mr. Lang laid out, which is that we want to keep the trucks and the loading and unnecessary vehicular circulation off the top here. I mean, there will be cars, right, who have to come to the buildings, and there's going to be Uber, and there will be Amazon trucks, I'm sure, right? But if we can keep 80% of this stuff underground and make the top a great people place, that's the goal here. So I appreciate your time, and we just are really happy to have clarified that for the record. Thank you very much. Right.
Thanks, Jack. Anyone else? All right. I would like to entertain a motion to adjourn the meeting.
So moved.
Hold on.
Oh.
There's a motion in a second.
I just want to clarify because I think Mr. McCullough misunderstood Ms. Munkberg's comments.
I'm sorry, Mac. Would you introduce yourself for the records, please?
Oh, sorry. Mac Cummins, Director of Community Development for the city. Ms. Munkberg is suggesting that we are at a place in the planning initiative process where we are adopting policy, not determining the exact mechanism of implementation of that policy. Staff has absolutely been talking to everyone involved about the potential for dedication of public spaces and public streets, but the time to decide that was not necessarily tonight. So the idea of having public access through the site is a policy issue that's coming up in the context of your amendments to the city's comprehensive plan. And Mr. McCullough sort of represented that that decision had now been made as a result of her comments and that that was not the intent.
Thanks for the clarification.
Okay.
Anyone has questions for Mac before he takes off? Thanks, Matt. I'd like to entertain a motion to adjourn the meeting.
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Thanks, everyone.
Are there any ribs left?
I think that's a record.
That's a record.
I may have even beat Jeremy's record.
You can keep the chair.
Let's reopen the meeting and make your chair.